Multicolored strands of lights twinkled from every surface around the dining room of the big Texan steak ranch, even from the antlers of mounted deer heads and the ears of one embarrassed-looking coyote. Only the buffalo head maintained its dignity. Well, he and the giant fiberglass Santa guarded the exit door. I'd wanted to come here ever since my rodeo cowboy father ran off before my promised 17th birthday dinner. But, in light of the news I just received, all of the decorations were suddenly a little too much. I cradled my iPhone between my ear and shoulder, one hand clutching the neck of my poncho and the other slinging my purse straps over my other shoulder. "Come on," I whispered to Jack, my boss, a man who can't figure out if he's a southern New Mexico rancher or a West Texas criminal defense attorney. Throw in the fact that he is mysterious, wounded, and part Apache, and you can probably see why half the women and nearly that many men in both locales had him starring in their own dreamland versions of 50 Shades of Grey. Not me, though. In my dreams, he starred with me in The Notebook. One eyebrow shot toward his hairline, and he answered at a normal decibel. "But we're celebrating, and our food hasn't come yet." The celebration was for my graduation from the foster parenting classes I'd been taking for the last 2 months. "And I really need to talk to you about something." In my ear, Child Protective Services investigator Wallace Gray answered.
"Hello, Emily. I'd almost given up on you."
"I just saw your texts." They'd come in a flurry, so by the time I'd read them, the whole story scrolled before my eyes. Two teens living in a CPS group home, Greg and Farah, had run away and were reported as soliciting rides at Love's Travel Stop, not 10 minutes from where I now stood glaring at Jack. Love's was a cross-country trucker mecca situated right off I-40 outside Amarillo. The kids were likely to get more than the kind of ride they intended from the type of person who'd pick up runaways.
"I thought you'd want to know," he said.
Wallace and I had taken a special interest in the pair recently when we accidentally rousted them from an abandoned house while looking for a missing girl. They'd run away from us then, too.
"Definitely. Thanks." "Their caseworker is picking me up in 10 minutes.
"Who is it?"
"Byron Philly. I don't think you've met him."
"Uh-uh."
"I need help. We can't get there for half an hour. Any chance you can get there sooner? See if you could find them?"
I didn't like the thought of Greg and Farah out there in the cold.
"We can be there in 10.
"We?" "I'm with Jack."
"I hope you mean with Jack, and not just with him, if you know what I mean."
I knew, but after one incredible, if tipsy, makeout session that seemed to be going somewhere, I had blown it with Jack, who didn't seem big on second chances. As for me, my oops-I-prefer-men-who-dress-as-women husband, Rich, wasn't officially an ex yet. Any day now, though. A waitress sashayed up to our table. From her diminutive size, she couldn't possibly eat here much, at least not the famous 72-ounce steak dinner. She popped a tray stand into place with her hip in a strangely provocative way, then balanced a load of food on it. Jack pretended to be staring at his phone instead of her tush. Her hands now free, she tossed a long braid behind her shoulder and turned to us with an electric smile, flashing a mouthful of metal.
"Who's rare and who's?"
She glanced back at the tray again and frowned, as if still in disbelief.
"Grilled beefsteak tomatoes?"
Being a vegetarian in the cattle capital of the universe isn't easy. I put my hand over the mouthpiece of my iPhone.
"To go. Check, please."
Then, into the phone.
"See you soon."
I hung up. Her brown eyes made O's, but she pulled out a handheld waiter pad and tapped a few keystrokes.
"Your bill will be here in a moment."
She smiled again.
"Y'all come back now, when you've got more time to enjoy your dinner."
Jack sighed, long and vibrato, and pulled out his wallet.